Good afternoon, John. Hey, Rob. How are you guys?
Very well, thanks. I'm just I'm going to be using this as my zone two cardio time. So I'm in the gym, so I probably won't come up and eat too much.
Yeah, no worries, mate. I'll make sure you get deep into your cardio before I ask you a question.
And wait until I'm pumping,
Yeah.
please.
Yeah, I'll just wait till I start to see that heart rate rise, the cheeks puff a little bit, and then I'll be straight in to ask you a question, Rob. Just let a few more people in. Hey, Paul. Hey, Lewis. We'll just give it another couple of minutes, guys, before we get started. See if anybody else joins. How are you, Paul? You okay, mate?
Perfectly fine.
Yeah. How's things been since you've been back from Tampa? All good?
Can't
Yeah. How are you finding your training and stuff? Is you taking it up a notch? How's things been?
taking it up a notch for what I could.
Yeah.
Knee finally stopped hurting a few weeks ago, so that's a plus.
Good. That's a positive. Yeah. And have you been using the bits and bobs from the kind of warm-ups and where we saw those limitations in the assessment and stuff? Have you been utilizing those?
Not too much. I have to go through that again.
And like I say, it's just good. Obviously, those assessments are just to identify any sort of weaknesses and limitations, because we know obviously for somebody like yourself that likes to lift relatively heavy, and he's not afraid of lifting heavy from a joint by joint approach. It's just making sure, like obviously building those into kind of your, let's say your warm up, your mobility, just to, again, more than anything, kind of charge up the area that's tight and get it active prior to use. Just because a lot of the exercises within the program you'll be doing will be very multi-joint. So just making sure everything's active and everything's firing, ready for the session ahead. Right. So I'll kick off today, guys, and obviously Greg's going to jump in where possible. So kind of what we're going to do today, guys, is this is more about you. As we say, we do these team calls just to open up the floor a little bit more for you guys to ask questions. Obviously, we're coming up to being a third through the year now, which is crazy to think about, coming up to the end of month four. Obviously, we've been on a couple of calls recently where we've set 30-day goals, 60-day goals. So today is very much about talking to each one of you on the call and just finding out kind of how things are going, most importantly. How are you progressing on the goals set in the last 60 days? Yes, but things since the start of the year. And just make sure that you guys have got all the tools that you need to attack the, let's say, the second third of the year. So by now, obviously, we're into the full swing of 2026. Obviously, there's going to be a few bottlenecks for each of you guys, kind of that you're working through. So today's very much about us giving the floor to you guys, obviously, us throwing our 10 cents worth at you in regards to things we can focus on. And if you haven't got any goals set for, let's say, we're obviously a little bit into Q2 now, but Q2, let's start to look at kind of coming into the proverbial summer for most of us. Obviously, Rob, it's slightly different with you being over there in Oz, but obviously coming into the summer, have we got everything set? Because we know typically coming into the summer months, things change. Obviously, weather gets a little bit better, social commitments tend to increase. So is there any strategies that you guys haven't got in that me and Greg can talk to you about putting in? So for me, over the summer, knowing that the lights are drawing out a little bit, there's a lot more activity, outdoor activities, where if you're in a place in the world where it's warm, me and Greg, not so much, but things like kind of social commitments and those sort of things. So obviously I'll start off and give the floor to you guys, but what a tool that I've utilized to great effect recently with kind of some of my clients is I've taken on a few new clients that travel. And most of you guys will be using the tracker, and most of you guys are quite meticulous with tracking calories. So what I found recently with a couple of my newer guys that are literally traveling every week is it was very hard initially to kind of nail down calories and make sure that we've kind of got everything within reason. So what I've spoken to them about is I know a couple of you guys are already doing it, but kind of using the benefits of things like AI to help with that strategy. So obviously you're all going to have protein goals, you're all going to have caloric targets for the day. And when you're out frequenting restaurants, business meetings, social events, it's always that little bit more difficult to quote unquote track calories. The benefit of tracking calories for me are very much not so much knowing that you're going to break down, utilize and absorb each and every one of those calories, because we know there's a number of factors that kind of come into play in regards to your body's ability to get through them, i.e. stress, sleep, recovery, digestion, etc. So for me, kind of hitting a calorie target is imperative from a consistency perspective as a coach, so that when we do make kind of caloric changes, where if we do make, for instance, expenditure changes or volume changes in your program, we can pretty much guarantee that it's going to elicit the correct response to either get you leaner, put on weight, et cetera, et cetera. So I know a few guys that have come into the service kind of prefer not to track calories because they see it more so as, let's say, a bit controlling, it gets over obsessive. But I think understanding the reason coming into these summer months of why kind of having some sort of template of tracking is going to be super important. Again, kind of what people will typically do is fast to the necessary event, but ultimately steering away from that and just keeping a consistent flow of food. And I think for me is probably one of the biggest things, and using tools like AI just to snap what you're eating, write down in the message, can you kind of give me an estimate of calories of this chicken, rice, and I don't know, avocado. So just keeping a broad stroke, because it is very easy coming into the summer months to kind of eat extra calories, kind of overshoot calorie targets where the progression from a composition standpoint isn't as fast. So I think for me, kind of definitely goals coming into the summer month for my guys and you guys that are listening to this call, either on the call or in the call, is very much creating a little bit more autonomy. So I like to keep it very fluid with guys in regards to, we don't abstain from social events. We don't choose not to go to those things, because we know one of the biggest markers of longevity is going to be human connection. And the summer months are a great way to create human connection, right? But just doing it with the mindset of kind of really not, I don't like the thought of people taking their own food with them personally, just because it's quite restrictive. Where about from a long-term strategy perspective, that's not feasible. So those of you guys with kids, those of you guys that kind of spend a lot of time, it's not feasible really to be taking your own food. If it's a possibility, great, but definitely creating some sort of autonomy over control, whether it be portion control, or ultimately another strategy that I use is if you are dining out, choose protein first or eat protein first, because that's going to decrease satiety and limit kind of overconsumption later on in the day or later on in that specific meal itself. So I think the first part of today is very much for those of you guys that are listening, just getting yourself ready for the summer and knowing that we are going to be psychologically have to be adaptive. So the same structure applies when the nights are cold, the nights are drawn in, and you're spending a lot of time at home in the winter months. We're now moving to the position where that's going to transition and change, where there's going to be a lot more light in the day. There's probably going to be a lot more social events and activities in the calendar. So just being very mindful of that coming into the new months and definitely taking it on a week by week approach. So I'm a big fan of my auditing with my guys and kind of using a Sunday to do almost a little bit of a self audit in regards to how they performed over the previous week, what kind of levers that they can pull coming into the new week from the previous week that they potentially haven't succeeded in, but definitely strategy planning in regards to any up and coming events and making sure that we're prepared for it, we're ready for it, so nothing takes us by surprise. There are going to be a few events that creep into the calendar last minute, but those of you guys that are really busy, which is most of you, you'll find that a lot of these things are in the calendar a week, 2 weeks, a month beforehand. So just making sure you get yourself set, ready, and you're in a position where you can really maximize these summer months, because it's quite often, and I've seen throughout my 20-year career, a time of the year where things can slip. But holding yourself accountable to those non-negotiables are going to be super important. So just making sure coming into the month of May, you've got everything set, you know kind of where everything's at, and you're kind of very clear on your intentions and the actions that you're going to yield throughout the summer months. Anything to add to that, Greg?
No, I think that's really useful. And like just piggybacking on the back of your mention of AI, I think some of the stuff that's really useful that I've used with a couple of clients that are traveling as well is, and I've used it myself and it's quite useful. So like I've asked ChatGPT in for like, you know, if I'm away somewhere, is how I can actually accrue my macros in the area that I'm in. And it works really, really well. So it'll pick out restaurants that'll fit your macros. It'll pick out things from stores and shops that will somehow that will accrue your macros that you're looking for that meal. So I think that's a really useful tool to start incorporating within, instead of going from place to place trying to find what you're looking for, is actually just ask ChatGPT. Like I use it, we have, you guys use Walmart and stuff like that, but like I'll use it for like Tesco or some of the stores here, where I'll just say, I need these macros from food that I can eat now. It needs to be whole food with X amount of fiber. And it does find it for you. It's a bit of a mix and match, but it's really, really effective ways while you guys are on the go.
Love that. Love that. Yeah, and I think kind of it's just knowing that AI can be a tool to help us. And yeah, I love that. I didn't even think about that, saying that in regards to that, Greg. So it's a good point in regards to kind of just being able to what we pride ourselves on. I know me and Greg do this, is kind of the goal of this process for you guys is, you guys are busy enough in other realms. So as I've said, I look at three realms: personal, physical, and professional. Professional and personal, which is home life, family, friends, etc., are the two areas that I really get my guys to focus on. And I try to relieve the pressure in the physical realm. So from a training, nutrition, lifestyle optimization standpoint, I try to allow my guys to trust me to be able to curate that for them, so it takes the pressure so they can have their focus elsewhere. And I think using tools like Greg's just mentioned, I think just makes your life a lot easier. And that's the goal, is to make things as simple and as repeatable as possible. Because you've heard me speak about operating systems before and how important it is to have multiple operating systems and not just lean into one, because the reality is you're not going to be eating in the same place at home, at work, for the duration of your life. So having tools like this in your tool belt is going to be super important to use when traveling. On obviously you guys go on vacation if you're traveling for work, and I think that what Greg said is going to be great to kind of just really kind of take the pressure off you guys, most importantly, so you're not kind of fishing around trying to find something, and most importantly wasting time, being as time efficient as possible but still staying as close to the desired targets is only going to see you progress on your journey of optimal composition, but also kind of knowing that it's going to yield to all the other areas as well. So what we're going to do now is pass the floor. Obviously, there been a few of you in here. It's not too bad. I know Lewis is off camera, so we'll see if he'll jump on last and a little bit later on. So I'm just going to go around the room now and just obviously give us an update of how things have been, obviously, for those of you guys that were at the camp, John and Paul, kind of how things have been since, kind of how you're progressing in your targets in the last 60 days, but definitely the first third of this year, what your focus is going to be moving into the middle part of the year, and also any bottlenecks that you're finding at this moment in time that me and Greg can help you with. So when you're ready, John, if you want to unmute yourself and just give us an update, buddy.
I think training's been going really well. My PT measured my shoulder, my rotator cuff strength today, and while not quite where he wants it, he doesn't think he needs to test it again. And I feel like my rotator cuffs and shoulders have gotten strong enough where I'm able to access other muscles better. Like I felt like I accessed chest really well this week, maybe better because I can go a little bit heavier. So as things are going, so at this point we're doing like a slow bulk, and so we're doing 4 days of 2 days of upper body, 2 days of lower body, and 2 days of at this point, nasal breathing an hour on the echo bike plus whatever. So, and we've been watching calories just to make sure that we're not adding calories too quickly.
So John's an interesting one in the sense that we ran a bulk with John, a year ago, 18 months ago, and he accumulated a lot of body fat when we did it last time. Say a lot for like more than what John should have, considering. Whereas this time he seems to be holding it an awful lot better. So he's accumulating somewhere between 1 pound and 1.5 pounds each month right now without accumulating any body fat. So he's doing a really, really good job. And he's really, really dialed into exercise execution. So every single video that he sends me, he takes feedback really well verbally and just executes again and again and again. So he's growing muscle at a pretty quick rate at the moment, and he's looking great. So he's done a great job.
Awesome work. And what do you think has been a distinct difference from a bulk 18 months ago compared to this time around? Have you done it? Have you used any different strategies? Kind of how have you gone about it and kind of made this time different?
I'm less apt to substitute carb sources. I've decided that things that I would take, I would eat that I'd say I can manage this, and then I would eat too much. I just don't buy those things because they're as Greg told me, I've got that gene that doesn't turn the switch off quick enough when I have hyper palliative foods. So I just try to keep them out of the house.
I think we've all got that gene, John. I've definitely got that gene as well. And in regards to kind of obviously with replacing those hyper palatable foods, like moving back to kind of your rotator cuff, what are you and Greg kind of been doing to strengthen that? And what is the greatest yield that you've seen in progress in the strength of that rotator cuff? Because it's great to hear, by the way, that kind of you're able to access new ranges, you feel that you're getting more so. What specifically have you been doing to kind of open that up? And has there been more of a diligence, do you feel, on your side in regards to doing the activation and the mobility work? Because this is always a big thing. I always say kind of we as trainees can tend to not do as much mobility just because we don't see instantaneous kind of benefits to it. So what's changed for you, and what sort of things are you doing to improve that rotator
I mean,
cuff?
I think I've just been diligent about the whole process. And Greg's been good about he's been good about communicating with my physical therapist about where I'm at and what I need. And then I try to make sure that I get the things that aren't in the program that I'm doing on the side.
Nice.
It's
That's good to hear, man.
consistency for John, right? So any of the rehab work that I put in for John, it's never missed. So although, as you probably all experience at some stage, when you're doing rehab or prehab work, it's boring. There's no pump from it. It doesn't necessarily make you feel good, so you rush it. There's not the same effort, whereas John just consistently hits it with the same effort every single week and slowly just seeing the progress from it.
I'd say a big there's a couple other big differences in that I was doing a lot of prehab 18 months ago, so there was less muscle, but we were just trying to get me through it. And then I think after the surgery, Greg had said, just put your all I care about is that you put get your protein requirement. So I wasn't as good about tracking I wasn't as good about tracking or sticking to what was in the plan when it came to carbs and fats. We're now where we've moved from like a prehab and a post re rehab perspective. Now we're really working on real muscle building. Would you agree, Greg?
Absolutely.
And what do you perceive, John? So obviously you're in flow at the moment, everything's going really well. So what are your challenges or potential bottlenecks coming into the next couple of months?
I've got a couple weeks where it's going to be hard to get all my training in, and I've got a family event to go to. I think it's stuff I can control for the most part. I do think that the trip home, Memorial Day weekend for a family wedding is going to be the hardest to work around.
It always is. But like I was saying earlier, I think it's taking everything in your stride, isn't it? And One thing I say to my guys, and I know Greg will probably tell you this, is big events, Memorial Weekend for you guys over there, and big thing life events, they're there to be celebrated. So I kind of, what I say to my guys is we work so hard around the year to be able to celebrate birthdays, obviously for you guys over there, Memorial, Thanksgiving, those sort of things are big events. And not to let loose, because we know that letting loose is, from a psychological perspective, is not you living your real identity, because hopefully for everyone on this call, kind of the whole kind of letting loose and throwing down and having a bender weekend is kind of a thing of the past, and it's stuff that we've done before. But ultimately, kind of, it is important to lean into those. And one thing I always say to my guys, not just even just around events, but we program this into daily activity as well, is obviously the family aspect. And obviously you're going home to see your family and just being present. I think being present and creating memories is such a underutilized kind of tool from a coaching perspective, that not so much as guys, but coaches don't use, because it's kind of stay on the plan. Whereas ultimately kind of life and moves very fast, right? So kind of taking the time Memorial Weekend to enjoy and spend time around family, but have a set of unwritten non-negotiables and commitments to yourself, not to Greg, but to yourself, that you're going to adhere to. So as you mentioned, kind of protein, kind of certain targets that you're going to hit, and just take, I always say it's take it, I said a second ago, taking the thinking out of it, because if you go with a set standard and a set skeleton of what you're going to do over the weekend, the chances are that you're going to stick to it, and you'll stay, knowing you, John, you'll stay really, really loosely to your target. So I think with kind of the bits and bobs that you've got on and kind of the weekend, I think it's important just to make, and you'll do this with Greg anyway, is just plan. Planning's super important. And then going back to what I said a little bit earlier on, is just making sure that we've got a calendar of knowing when these events have come up and speaking to them prior, so you have all those non-negotiables set.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing for me when I'm here is, because I live in one of the largest metropolitan areas in the world, and I'm a freelance musician, I spend a lot of time in the car if I'm on my way to a job in the evening and back, and then I get home and I might not have reached my calorie goals, or it's been hours since I ate, and then I have the munchies, and or I eat too close to bed, and I can't afford to do that because I get reflux really easily.
Yeah. So again, it's looking at strategies within that, right? And potentially if you're in the car a lot, and again, you've probably already spoken to Greg about this, but kind of looking at potentially a shake-based meal if you light on calories that you have in the car, and kind of just little strategies that you can have to avoid, especially if you're prone to reflux, kind of eating too late and too close to that kind of sleep hygiene window, just because as you've experienced like the effects of it. And it's always very difficult, because that's why time efficiency is so important, but just trying to, most importantly, create a structure that works for you and have something at hand all the time, in your car, in your work bag, so it's very easy accessible.
Yeah, I'm pretty good about it most of the time, but yeah. We've been dealing with this. I've been working with Greg for over 2 years now, so
yeah,
we have a lot of strategies in place.
God bless you, John. I don't know how you've lasted 2 years with Greg. I just don't, mate. You should have a medal just for that, to be honest. No, but great job, mate. Right, so I'm going to come straight to you, Rob, because I know you're still early into your zone two. So obviously you don't look as though you're panting yet. So I'm going to catch you before you start panting. Give us an update. I haven't seen you for a little while, mate. How's things? How's life? Give us an update.
Yeah, things are pretty good. I haven't made too many of these calls. Now the time zone changed back, it's a bit easier for me.
Yeah.
It's 8 in the morning now, so I just got the kids to school, get my zone two done and I can join again. Training's been good. I think this is the longest period of time I've been consistent without an injury, or just almost 2 years probably with Andrew. I think probably similar to John, my first year or so with Andrew with body composition, I'm rebuilding. You know, get the body fat down, have a lot of back issues, knee issues, so we rebuild a lot of my key exercises, mobility for the hips, stability from the core, real tweaking the form. Then we went into the bulking phase, and it was supposed to be a lean bulk, but I don't know if it was my discipline or whatever happened, but when I went from a very hard cut, I walked past the bread roll and put on 20 kilos. It was crazy. So the strength is coming out really well, and I was enjoying the change of training, moving more of the strength to hypertrophy. But the body fat came back on really quick. And it was hard for me to tell then how much muscle I'm putting in, how much body fat I'm putting in. So I got to say, said to Andrew, probably a few months ago, like, I'm starting to feel flabby again. Like, yes, the strength's good. Really enjoying increasing strength on my lifts and being pain free and back in the squatting and everything else. But I'm feeling flabby again. So I wanted to do a cut. And I wanted to go a harder cut because last time I had a long way to go. So I said, look, this is 12 to 18 months, very incremental. So then I remember a call with Steve on one of these calls, and he said, I think it was Steve, maybe it was Gavin. You know, they said when they want to cut hard and cut short. So I sort of chased that mindset with Andrew, that I want to, you know, bring the calories down, really get the training. I thought I'd be able to do that this time, but I found a sort of, it's just stagnating a bit, you know, like my body weight's not coming off. And I think where I'm at is just psychological more than anything. The training's really good. My nutrition is probably good Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
But what I've started to recognize is I try to sort of ward on just grit and discipline through too much. And I run out of steam or sort of energy in the tank to be good to focus at the end of the week.
Yeah.
You know, four kids at home. My wife went to the office full time, so I'm the sort of the stay-at-home dad for getting to school and activities and every meal. And I'd find myself get that Friday night, Saturday night. And there's almost a mental release of like, I need something to reward, you know, mark in the week. I don't drink anymore. So
yeah,
food became it. And I was just doing the Sunday, weight pops up Monday to Friday, chase it back down to where I started Saturday, Sunday. And I was doing this almost 2 kilo weekly zigzag. So I've changed the program with Andrew only as of this week. Just got this uncanny ability to know when I'm plateauing. So I've gone back into a German body composition, still sticking with like three weight sessions, having one heavy compound at the start of the DBC, so a heavy row or heavy squat, and then the DBC, which that's added on to our zone two. So my average calorie burn is probably up from 200-ish to what I've done before, and 500 per session. Well, that all adds up. And I've just tried to, I was actually using ChatGPT as my amateur site to say, this is the trends I'm noticing when I'm not eating well, when I'm sort of blowing out, coming up with some strategies. And that helped me realize that I was probably just relying too much on pure strength of will. And I can't just not have the food in the house because it's kids eat, so it's hard as that. You know, so it's not just me in the house. I can't just get rid of it all. I noticed a few things. I was almost shame eating. I'd go into the pantry to nibble at something after the kids have gone to bed. And it's worse if my wife's not home. But there's something that's psychologically about hiding this behavior. I just tried to unpick a few of those things. And I actually bought a kitchen lockbox. And just said, kids go to bed. Get all the Easter eggs or whatever the kids have got in the house, their muesli bars and chocolate on it for the next day. Put them in a lockbox. Set the timer for 12 hours. Go brush my teeth. Just change the routine. Try to change the routine and break the habit. Get them to bed. I do my 25 minutes of mobility stretching to warm my, that's some sort of deep stretching and breathing, bringing my nervous system down a bit. So I'm just trying those things. I haven't nailed it yet. I think that's my challenge. And the other thing is that psychological benchmarking. When I joined the program, I was at 110 kilos, got down to 92 kilos, went back up to 104. And when we started this, I dropped 2 kilos very quickly. And now I'm just buffering just above 100, 101, 102. And in my head, I keep saying, I've sort of almost reset my clock to 18 months ago. When I look at the photos and I go, my body composition is very, very different to the 102 kilos I am now versus the 102 kilos I was a year ago. A lot stronger, a lot leaner. But it's still that I want to chase that down to sort of 95, get probably lean again, because I just felt really lower body fat stage.
Yeah. What was how long did it take you to get back up to that plus 100 kilos from getting down to your leanest?
It's probably over about 6 months. And I think in hindsight, the 92 was a bit of a false economy. That was quite deep. I graded. You know, we did that, we did a couple of photos, and the next week I jumped up several kilos, you know, to 94, 95, just by having some carb in my system and some water. So I think 94, 95 was probably more true weight. But I did find the first few months, it was something like a kilo or two a week.
Yeah.
And then I had to add a little opportunity. This isn't, I'm like, even the calorie crushing is off, or something is off. And I think it was just discipline. It's that once you go from I'm kind of a all or nothing guy, I don't starve myself. I just don't, kind of moderation. So moving back into a slight calorie surplus, it was, I can kind of afford to eat this and still have to stick to my macros. And I just got a bit more lax on tracking and, you know, what's one more slice of bread? Doesn't matter that much.
Yeah. Any thoughts on the nutritional side, Greg?
I just think, like, and this is going back to, like, John's original bulk. I think the mistake I made as a coach is not being really diligent and careful about the caloric increases. So it's like, okay, you know, you figure out the equation and you say, okay, I can put them to this kind of caloric intake. But then what you have to do as a client as well, and is trying to figure out actually what percentage of weight am I putting on every single week on average? So a lot of people want to see a pound and a half, a kilo, whatever that looks like weekly. And it's just for us naturals, it's just too much weight gain. And you're going to the fast because we have these almost like buffers either side of our maintenance, right? So we can go 100, 200 calories above or under and nothing really happens, right? And then you have this extra buffer above of 200-ish calories where you'll accumulate predominantly muscle. This is on average. And then as you go up and up and up and up, it's just laws of diminishing returns where you're getting less and less muscle out of the extra calories and just that increase in fat. And it ends up, I've been in the same position where then you have to spend an excessive amount of time trying to cut the weight back down to try and start again. Whereas if you can find that sweet spot of really modest weight gain, you can stay in it for really long periods of time.
That's certainly what I'm aiming for. And I also think that statistically, I reckon my calorie tracking was probably out by 10%-ish, you know, because I look at what they, and I track pretty religiously, but I look at what my fitness pal says I'm consuming. And it doesn't marry up to the outcome. You know, I'll be on what I think is maintenance, you know, sort of for me about 2200. And I'm putting on weight, like a lot of weight. So I'll drop it to 2000 calories and go, this should be a pretty significant deficit for me. And it seems to be about maintenance. So I just think that's the, you know, if I'm cooking my own food, I'm probably very good on the protein. I go, well, that's exactly 300 grams of chicken tenderloin that I'm eating. But it's that. The rest, you know, what was in the sauce, what was in the other bits and pieces. So I think my carbs and fats are probably, I'm probably under-reporting what I'm eating. But now, so I'm on my fitness power going for 1,800 calories. I think that's probably more like 2,000. I've just recognized it almost. What's the scale? What's the body composition? Not like faultlessly go, oh, yeah, my fitness power, but I can have 2,000 more calories, so I'll go eat it.
I think for me as well, it's kind of as a natural, it's very difficult because, again, it's taken into account, obviously, hearing you speak before and knowing you a bit better, Rob. It's kind of understanding the nature of life as well and the effects of stress, the effects of sleep, obviously having four children, all those sort of things. There's a lot going on. And I think for you, kind of moving away from the nutritional side and the reporting, I think kind of the concept, it sounds like when you were speaking, there needs to be an element of more consistency, and you're totally right from a psychological side, kind of leading into discipline will only get you so far. Because once, as I've said in the previous webinar that I've done, is kind of once stress is ramped up, then discipline, it's very hard to lean onto discipline. And I think kind of understanding, like you said, you've done a great job pulling out alcohol and those sort of things, but understanding, I think, the crux behind, and I love the idea of kind of having a lock cupboard, by the way, because obviously it forces you to essentially, well, it forces you to not be able to reach for this stuff. But I think examining from a psychological side, why you're leaning into that, and kind of, I think kind of, for me, it's a very long-winded question. It's something that takes time, but on your reflections and kind of, if you do gratitude and kind of you do a bit of journaling, trying to understand where that comes from in regards to the desire, and whether it comes from a place of kind of have it and want it, a place where kind of a place of fear, where people often kind of use self-sabotage as a reason to stay safe. Like I was speaking to a client today around self-sabotage and the fear around doing everything to kind of completion, just things like his tracker and stuff, because it's safe where he is. So I think delving beneath the layers psychology-wise in regards to that crux and almost that reliance on a little bit of emotional eating and why you feel like kind of come Friday or Saturday, if you've had a particularly good week, why you require reward, but why kind of from a neuro perspective, kind of those feelings come into your mind. And I think I always use kind of a pros and cons kind of, and in this strategy of kind of food is I use something called a 5-minute rule, where if you're tempted to eat something, and when that stuff does come out the box, inevitably, because that lock box is not going to be there forever, give yourself a 5-minute rule. Kind of when you go to reach for it, which is natural human nature, we just go to reach stuff kind of mindlessly, is give yourself a set of 5-minute timer. If you still want that kind of, how I categorize food, it's not good food or bad food, right food or wrong food. It's just food that's congruent to your goal and food that's non-congruent to your goal. If you're still after 5 minutes wanting to reach for that non-congruent food, then eat it. Eat it, examine it, and kind of really get into the complexities of why you've done it. So kind of I use the 5 whys series in kind of, why have I eaten this? Oh, because I wanted it, but why? Because I'm hungry. And going beneath the surface in regards to the actual kind of almost, let's say, neuro connection of why you've consumed it, if that makes sense.
No, it does. Really interesting. Self-sabotage is definitely the word I've used. I'd know, yeah. And again, ChatGPT conversation was quite good at choosing some of these why questions. And I realized that when I'm reaching for it, I'm not even tripping myself that I need this, want this. I'm not lying to myself and saying I earned it. It's almost a deliberate, I reach for it, that chocolate. In my head, I go, I know that's not good for me. I know I'll regret that in the morning. I know even as I'm eating it, it won't taste that good. And then it starts compulsion. And I think a lot of it is back to army upbringing, where everything is a discipline. Army rewards, yeah. You just grit your teeth and do some hard things. And so I've tried to reshift my mantra when I'm going to bed. Not that I'm the most disciplined man in the world, it doesn't matter what temptations around me. It's that I'm a person that's smart enough to have systems around me. And so I go, cool, I'm not gonna rely on your discipline of leaving open chocolates on the bench when the kids go to bed. Like, yeah. I don't have to just prove my ability to the discipline. I'm gonna put systems in place and move that out of the way, go have my shower, wind down my nervous system, do my stretching. And half an hour later, I get the same dopamine kick from having resisted temptation, but I would get a sense of satisfaction from resisting as opposed to indulging.
Yeah.
But that's the type of journey.
I think it's feeling that more, isn't it? I think it's just that feeling that you felt the dopamine hit from the stretch in your shower, your parasympathetic stuff. It's just, it's it takes a long time to rewire. Like people think kind of, I always say to people, doing a 12-week diet or doing your first cut, which you did a fantastic job. Even at the end of that cut, from a neurobiology perspective, that rewiring is still not done. And it's great that you said about kind of the childhood stuff, because you guys at Heard Me Speak know I talk a lot. I don't go into it too deep, but with my clients, it's a little bit further because I've got the time. It's looking at trauma and where does that stem from, that self-sabotage. And a lot of the time, and if I wanted to broad stroke it, it comes from low self-worth, low self-efficacy, and low self-belief. So kind of a lot of the time when people reward with food, and again, perception-wise, and this is me just kind of speculating, is how you perceive yourself. So Pete, perceive yourself as a bigger person, and that belief system of you being a lean, mean fighting machine at 92 kilos is just not resonated with your body yet. Because as we know, when you go on a period of weight loss, you typically gain it three times quicker than you lose it. It's hard to get down there, but yeah, you have one non-congruent meal and your weight jumps up 2 kilos. And people are like, well, why does that happen? We know from an apoptosis perspective, which is just fat cell death, it doesn't happen lightly. It takes a while. So it does take your body a significant amount of time of being lean for it to actually adapt. And I think neurochemically as well, kind of Greg might have a bit more insight into this, is kind of it takes a while for you to believe it, but also your body to feel it. So old habits do die hard. So I think that constant reaffirming of the dopamine hit you're getting from the alternate to eating chocolate, I think is a great thing if you can continue with that as well.
The only other thing I went to, I decided to deliberately, I'm doing a ninja creamy that I make up ahead of time for Thursday and Friday night.
Yeah.
That's a kind of taste and feel like ice cream, but it's about 15 grams of protein. Basically some casein, some good yogurt, you know, sort of, it's about 600 kilojoules, 800 kilojoules, so pretty light. But it's rather than relying on grit, no, that is my treat. I've organized it. I know in advance I'm going to treat myself on Friday night, but I'm doing it in a way to get 350 grams of protein and it doesn't blow out my macros, and I build that into my, I put it on my meal planner at the start of the day. I'm just trying to break that idea that, you know, they're bad food.
Yeah.
It's a different food. And,
yeah.
You know, so that's something I've been working on.
Yeah. As I've said to you, there's no such thing in this stigma around good food, bad. It categorizes it. And I think from an emotional pull perspective, when you want to self-sabotage, people reach for quote unquote bad food. But I don't think there's a such thing. It's food that's conducive to a goal, food that's non-conducive. And if we can kind of take this stigma off categorizing food, it stops us attributing a label to it. And typically, we are very good at self-sabotage. We are biochemically kind of, from a safety and protection mechanism, negatively biased as human beings. We are. It's very difficult to be more, I don't want to like to use positive and negative, but to be more half cup full than half cup empty. There's very few people that are like that. A majority of us are. So I think kind of from a food perspective, not labeling food, this goes out to everybody, not labeling food and just understanding that it's very easy to eat a bad food and then kind of reaffirm a self-fulfilling prophecy of, I'm not good enough, or I don't deserve this. And all these sort of feelings, and this is not you, Rob, I think this is just in general, like we're very good at validating the negative elements to self-belief and perception of oneself. Whereas if we can kind of, again, from an abundance perspective, start to reframe that and kind of decategorize food and just understand this food that serves you and food that doesn't, and it's no deeper than that. Like you said, kind of how I look at kind of a reward for food is the same. I look forward to my smoothie every morning because it tastes great. It's got fruit in. I love fruit. And what are the foods that are congruent that taste amazing? And can we reward ourselves with that stuff, which over time from a patterning drill just starts to build a safer, more legible operating system that pours towards your goal rather than if things are particularly stressful, kind of pulls you away from it.
I think, but there was one really good point that you make there. Like when you talk about good food and bad food, it's labeling it with like almost a morality stamp. And I know just this is even from personal experience, when you label food in that way, like if you're going to be bad, you're going to be really bad, right? Like that's why most people always say the same thing. Like, I don't just have one cookie, one biscuit, whatever that looks like. I have to have them all because you've gone off plan. So you might as well go really off plan when you look at it in that way. So I think it's a really good point made by Dan not to categorize things in that way and to avoid labeling them as good and bad and putting in like almost a moral stamp on them.
Because it's like again, it's the reason why I said that is it comes back to kind of identity as well, and how we identify things, because it's, and again from a self-belief, and this is away from food, it's kind of we typically are really poor as humans, as not labeling stuff, and kind of, as we said, we take ownership of certain things that should never taken ownership for, in regards to kind of things that have happened or kind of stuff that negatively happens. We almost take ownership of stuff, whereas ultimately we shouldn't take ownership of anything that comes food or behavior related. The minute we take it and we believe we are a certain thing, kind of that's where things typically go wrong, because it'll always err on the side of negative as well. So I think the strategy that you've got in place is great, Rob, but the most important thing that you've done is you've acknowledged kind of where the levers are to pull, and yourself and Andrew have started to put a strategy in place for that. So great job, mate. Right,
Okay.
Paul, you're up, buddy. How's things been with you? Obviously, we had a little chat at the start, kind of. So you said things are going well, kind of. Again, where are you excelling at the moment, and where are your bottlenecks? What are you, is there anything that me and Greg can help you with tonight, buddy?
From a training standpoint, still pushing as much as I can.
Yeah.
Prep bar deadlifts, seen increases twice since the camp.
Good.
Back squat still has difficulty getting the depth, but I'm also doing heavier than before. I think at this point, like I'm ending at 10 pounds lighter than the last time I did it, tested for the 1,000 pound club. Bench press, progress with that is limited more just mind failing, because quite frankly, I think it's Pat Tuesday. Got I think 11 reps when I was trying to go for 13, dropped the weight by like 20 pounds. I was able to get 13 that set. So just more when I get to start slowing down, my mind just says no. And after like one or two reps, I've after starting to slow down, I'm just done. So trying to figure out how to work past that in a more safe environment.
Have
I
you
guess.
have you had your genetics done by any chance?
Yes.
Yeah. And what did, from a muscle fiber perspective, kind of, can you remember where you sat, or kind of whether you was predominantly fast twitch, slow twitch?
I think the summary said it was an equal mix of both, so I could do like either type of
Oh,
training
that's good.
defined with
Yeah,
that.
the only reason I ask, because obviously I know that I'm definitely fast twitch, and I'm the same. Like, you get me to do 12 reps, I'm strong for eight, and with any sort of load when I'm looking to progress it, and it's almost like I short circuit at 8 reps. I'm strong for eight, get to the bottom, and then there's nothing left in the tank. So again, I think you've got to look at circumstances as well, and there's a lot of factors, especially going as high as 13 reps, because it's a long way to go with keeping mechanical tension, and it takes a lot of psychological concentration to get tension on that muscle, especially with a bench press for 13 reps. So it could just be kind of, again, environment may have changed in regards to less quality sleep, a little bit lack of recovery. There's a number of factors, but I think the main thing is across the board, from your trap bar, kind of your hack squat stuff, you're seeing steady progression. So it'll be interesting kind of how that looks in future. If you do continue to see a distinct drop off, then my advice, with again, if you move into more of an intensification phase, kind of from an accumulation phase, which I believe 13 reps will be more of an accumulation style phase, it'd be interesting to see where that strength's at if you moved into a bit more of an intensification phase as well. And what are your kind of bottlenecks in regards to kind of stuff at the moment? What you've got coming up? What do you envisage that's may kind of be a struggle for you coming into the next couple of months?
Nothing for May. I'm going to be taking like two different vacations, I think in like one in June and one in July. Visiting my sister out in Missouri.
Nice.
Last few times I've done that, nutrition just wasn't there.
Yeah.
Because quite frankly, they have two boys, and I'm not going to make them focus on that too and trying to
Yeah.
corral them because my family's a handful and can be. But workouts, I'm able to get everything done with like dumbbells and everything like that. And Coach Andrew's always been good with reworking the workouts for that. That's not too much of an issue. One in July, it's going to be a family vacation to Disney.
Okay,
The
nice.
nutrition is not going to be there either. And depending on
Orlando.
how, yes, Disney
Oh.
World in Florida.
The absolute worst place in the world to stick to any sort of nutrition plan. I've had so many clients go to Orlando, and the choice of good food in Orlando is pretty much zero. Zero. It's honestly, it's the wildest place in the world. Like, I couldn't believe it. I've had so many clients go there and send me menus, and I've received the same menus half a dozen times. And I'm like, if I could ban my clients from going anywhere in the world, it'd be Orlando in Florida at Disneyland, mate. So I would love to give you advice on that, but all I'm going to say is good luck. Take plenty of jerky, protein powder, and anything you can get in your case, because other than that, pardon my French, you know I love a swear word, you're going to be fucked.
Oh, I know.
I wonder though, like looking at, like I just pulled up because I couldn't remember off the top of my head, pulled up your genetics. And you do carry some of the genes for being like really explosive. So it could be some of the reason why when you're chasing higher repetitions that it does tend to become quite difficult because people, although you're like your mixed fiber type, when you have what's like the ACTN3 gene, it means that you can produce a lot of strength and power relatively quickly, but it doesn't tend to last that long. So like if we were to take you as a teenager and pick a sport for you, it probably wouldn't be long distance running. It'd probably be something like track and field, 200, 400 meters, for example. So it like if you're struggling to always increase repetition on 13 reps, like looking at something maybe with lower repetition, not super low, but somewhere around the 8 repetition mark might be a little bit more beneficial for you to see strength gains.
I like that. And the reason I asked that question, because I saw that one was in Tampa, because off straight out the gate, Paul, he was uber strong. He was uber strong. Kind of, we kept every exercise I had you on, sorry. We kept increasing weight, but we noticed a distinct drop off when we kind of hit the drop sets or the kind of extended sets that we used. And that's one of the reasons why I asked you kind of whether you'd had a look at your genes, because if I want after having seen you in action now in Tampa, I would definitely say you were more explosive. And so for me, kind of potentially looking at tweaking, as Greg says, bringing especially your kind of main compound lifts, like your squats, your trap bars, your kind of bench press into smaller rep ranges, and potentially chasing the volume in more kind of stable exercises. Like if we're looking at chest, things like a pec deck, if you're looking at kind of back, more of a seated row or a pull down variation, legs, kind of lying leg curl, leg extension, for instance, that's where I'd probably try to go a little bit more of the higher reps, just because from what I've seen, and then obviously what Greg's mentioned here with your genetics, it'd be interesting to see.
At least with the bench press, that structure, first three sets are 6 reps. Last set is 8 to 12 at 90% the weight. Then when I get over 12 to increase the weight across the board. So it's just at the point where I've been doing the same one for a while, and I've been ranging between like 10 and 12.
And I always find doing three heavy sets of 6 to 8, then going into a 13 rep set, even at 90%, for somebody with the kind of fiber tight and the ACTN type that you've got, it's a little bit more difficult. I know I could be sure as shit that kind of if I tried to do 13 reps after doing three heavy sets of 6 to 8, you're going to reach a peak very quickly in regards to improvements, if that makes sense. So, because a drop off from a fatigue mechanism standpoint is going to be uber significant in that 6 to 8, especially if you require that little bit of extra recovery, the buffering of lactic acid. So, I'm not saying it's wrong by any stretch, but I'd Again, it's not going against what you're doing at the moment, but I'd probably err on the side of kind of three sets of 6 to 8. And as soon as you're boxing off 8 on a certain weight, then you go up in weight rather than chasing that 12 or 13. Personally, I feel that kind of that may just be a little bit of an overstretch to yield the response and the strength increases that I know that are important to you as well.
And how would that look with crap confidence on the bench press every now and then? Some days I
So,
just go in, crap confidence. Sometimes I just go in and nerves get set off when going to heavier weights, and it's harder to psych myself up for that in the moment.
I think kind of when you have, because how you ch perceive to sit, do you find that it's more difficult to tap into the bench press after the if a week before you miss the reps of 12 or 13?
No, normally I'm able to get the same amount or a little bit more. It's just random bouts where if I'm going to increase weight, like past time I did last set for dumbbell bench press, went up to 65 pounds, and like I was able to do that a year ago, first time I've done it in like a year or so. Just more just nerves getting set off and thinking, not knowing I could do it again.
I think it's what it sounds a lot like it is again is like you said, it's simply put like nerves and fear. So kind of I think kind of I always say fear when you're going into a lift is good. Because again, it allows you to become laser focused. And the reality is, we require a certain amount of sympathetic drive going into these big lifts. So fear is a part of that. That fight or flight response is required, and the sympathetic dominance is required going into big lifts because we want training and especially your bigger lifts to be an acute stressor. So I think as long as you're continuing to progress, I wouldn't worry about that. It's just kind of trying to balance out the kind of nerve element with kind of just the confidence that you can do it as well. And you've proved time and time again, you've got enough vetted proof that you're going to go in and kind of increase your weights anyway. But great job anyway, bud. And Lewis, how are you, buddy? Last one on. I know you're driving, so just give us a quick overview. I don't want to take you too much away from driving, so give us a quick update. How are things, bud?
You're muted, brother.
He's always muted.
He's always muted.
We've been doing these calls for 6, 12, how many years now, and he's still not this realized how. Does he do this on your calls, Greg? Does he go on mute?
He'll always start the call on mute. He
No
can't
stress though.
figure
Just give me, just most importantly, give me a thumbs up that you're okay, Lewis. That's the most important.
it out.
Good. That's what I like to see. Right, guys. So before we shut off today, has anybody got any more questions? Like, I hope that that's been helpful for you. I like these calls because, again, what I'd like you guys, because you guys are very free, you frequent these calls really often. That's not even proper English. Often is next time that you see a call for that me and Greg are on collectively as a team, or me, Greg, and Gavitt are typically be, is just bring some stuff to the call, boys. So kind of how we want to set it up is kind of what's going well, what you're struggling with, and kind of because I always say on these calls, like something that you're struggling with or you have questions on, you can be damn sure somebody listening to this call or potentially somebody else on the call is struggling with the same things. It's very rare that I, from in my client base particularly, and I know Greg has this as well, but we'll encounter new questions or something new that somebody's struggling with. Somebody, it's typically very consistent with what people have kind of, or people experience the same sort of thing. So your guys' input is vitally important on these calls because your experience, your problems can always help other people. But as always, guys, thank you for joining the call. Me and Greg appreciate it. For those of you guys that are listening back, if you have any questions, fire them across to us. And we look forward to seeing all of you guys very soon.
Thanks, fellas.
Thank you guys for jumping on. I know it's a crappy time of night. I love
Yeah, it
these
is, man.
sessions, and I get a huge amount when I hear like Paul, John. I just there's always something that I go, "Oh yeah, that's me. Oh yeah, that's me." I'm like Paul with the bench press. I was like, "Oh, John talking about the weight coming on." Oh, that's me. Yeah, really enjoy these calls.
I always say to Rob, everybody, Rob, and in the nicest possible way, no, nobody on this call, myself, Greg, none of you guys, none of you are special. You're not unicorns that experience these problems in isolation that nobody's ever experienced before. A lot of the problems that we find collectively, that me, Greg, have probably found, you guys will be finding as well. So hearing you guys and kind of you guys being vulnerable and talking about it, not just, yes, it allows us to try to help you, but it helps your peers as well, which is why these calls are so important.
Appreciate it.
Thanks,
always a pleasure, guys. Well, have a nice rest of the day wherever you are. Enjoy and look forward to speaking to you guys.
And sleep well.
Thanks, yeah, boys. Cheers, boys. Bye-bye.